Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope and our Conversations Cafe episode for the month of September, which also happens to coincide with National Suicide Prevention Month, as well as including World Suicide Prevention Day. As always, I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and I'm not a mental health professional in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. Before we jump into our live event this week, some housekeeping as it relates to recent and upcoming events. First, Season 3 of Anthologies of Hope starts next week, and we will be back in full force with an awesome lineup of mental health advocates that I've been lucky enough to meet via the journey that Anthologies of Hope has put me on. Look forward to at least 10 episodes of our traditional, long-form, sit-down interviews coming at you every Wednesday. Second, if you've been listening to our Conversations Cafe episodes over the summer, you heard me promoting Hope for the Day's Conversations Summit 2019. We were on site for this excellent event, focusing on youth mental health and proactive suicide prevention, as well as streaming and recording a number of the Conversations Cafe sessions from the main stage. The good news is that these will be coming your way in a very short time. In addition to our traditional weekly Wednesday interviews in Season 3, we'll be dropping the Conversations Cafe episodes recorded both at the Conversations Summit and Sip of Hope Coffee Bar each week on Fridays as well. So you'll be getting twice as much conversation goodness as usual. Third, as I mentioned in the opening, September is National Suicide Prevention Month and also contains World Suicide Prevention Day on September 10th. As such, we put together a team of HeartCamp alumni to do some fundraising for To Write Love in Our Arms World Suicide Prevention Day campaign this year, because Anthologies of Hope would not exist if not for HeartCamp and the wonderful HeartCampers sharing their powerful stories with me and all of you over the first two seasons. I would like to send out a huge thank you, one that I cannot sincerely say how big it is, to everyone who donated to our team page at give.twloha.com/HeartCamp18 or anyone on our team. It was because of you that we were able to raise over $2,200 for To Write Love in Our Arms' most successful campaign to date, as well as make the HeartCamp team the team with the fourth highest total funds raised. To all of you, we owe our sincere and grateful thanks because each and every one of our listeners, you make today better, and we are glad you are here. Again, I did not anticipate this level of response for whatever reason, but I am constantly blown away by our listeners and the size of their hearts. The team page is still open, and you can still donate if you are listening now and would like to be a part of the movement. Head on over to give.twloha.com/HeartCamp18 to donate. Fourth and finally, wrapping up the most promotional pre-roll we've had to date, if you will be in the Chicago area on Thursday, October 10th, don't miss the chance to attend one of my favorite nights of the year, and I haven't even experienced it in person yet. I'm talking about Hope for the Day's Hope Ball, hosted at Salvage One this year in Chicago's West Loop. Hope for the Day's signature event brings the Chicagoland community together for an evening of celebration of the future of mental health that we are all creating together as a community. 100% of these proceeds from the Hope Ball benefit Hope for the Day's mental health education programs, including their free public one-hour Things We Don't Say workshops and four-hour peervention workshops, along with Hope for the Day's newest community education variants of their Project Red Team for active military, veteran, and military spouse mental health education programs, workplace mental health, which is increasing mental health education and resources in workplaces from large corporations to small businesses. Don't miss the presentation of the Partner Prevention Award to Old Irving Brewery and keynote speaker Dan Carcillo, mental health advocate, lived experience advocate, as well as a two-time Stanley Cup winner with the Chicago Blackhawks. I also need to do some detective work to figure out if there's going to be some hops for hope at the Hope Ball because I ran out of my supply way too fast. But either way, check out hftd.org/hopeball2019. That's hftd.org/hopeball2019 for all the details. VIP tickets sold out very fast, but general admission tickets as well as sponsorship opportunities are still available, which include some awesome perks. So we hope to see you there, all fancy and ready to celebrate. Whew. Okay, and now on with the show. As always, Conversations Cafe is a monthly live podcast recording at Sip of Hope Coffee Bar featuring education and open forum dialogue on the intersections of mental health within our communities. This education programming is brought to you by Hope for the Day with support from their partners in prevention, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention of Illinois, and Banya Treatment Center. This week's event is titled The Light Project. We talk with photographers and Hope for the Day agents of impact, Jamie Parker and Chris Callen. Jamie and Chris are the brainchild of The Light Project, a portrait series in collaboration with Hope for the Day. They ask two questions: how mental health and suicide have impacted your life, and what gives you hope? As the person shares, Jamie and Chris capture two portraits to show that we all have darkness and all have light. You'll hear what inspired them to create the Light Project in its current form, some of the highlights they've had along the way, and their plan for making it generally available in 2020. Attendees also had the opportunity to participate in the Light Project at the end of the episode, and I have to say it was one of the most well-engaged, interactive events I've experienced at our Conversations Cafes to date. So I'm looking forward to seeing the Light Project as soon as it is available. Every week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you are in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from Troy Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day. Troy Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help, and Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, at gmail.com. Like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. So wrapping up our extra long intro this week, Season 3 starts next week with our first long-form episode on Wednesday and Conversations Cafe on Friday. Thank you to everyone who donated to our World Suicide Prevention Day campaign on our Troy Love in Our Arms, our campaign team page. And check out the Hope Ball at hftd.org/hopeball2019 and come say hi. We'd love to meet you. But you've heard enough of me for now for this week. So this week's episode, Conversations Cafe, The Light Project.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this episode's recording of the Conversations Cafe, hosted live at Sip of Hope. Sip of Hope Coffee Bar is Hope for the Days LLC and is the world's first coffee shop where 100% of the net proceeds go to support suicide prevention and mental health education. Tonight's episode is called The Light Project and is brought to you by support from Banyan Treatment Center and American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And we have a really special episode as we wind down Suicide Prevention Month with this awesome episode focusing on the Hope for the Day project. Jackie, tell us a little bit about Suicide Prevention Month. Definitely.
So to kind of give you some stats on kind of what's going on today with suicide and the numbers that we have, 47,000 people complete suicide in America each year, 121 plus per day. That includes 20 to 30 active people who are in duty as well as veterans. That also includes a large number of teens ages 14 to 24, which is the second leading cause of death in teens in 2019, as well as actually, in 2019, it was the higher leading cause of death in active line of duty police officers, other than, you know, death by, you know, something that happens in the field. And suicide does not have a prejudice. That's why we are having this talk and continue to have this conversation, because it's important for everybody to be aware, to continue talking about it, asking people how they're doing anything they can to lower these numbers. And that's our biggest goal, is to, if you know, reach out to people, and if we can do something or make an impact, then, you know, that's our goal.
Thank you, Jackie. So with Suicide Prevention Month winding down, people spend a lot of time talking about this conversation, sometimes searching for solutions, sometimes talking from an optimistic side. But sometimes we don't talk about the sort of brutal realities behind those statistics. When we talk about 47,000 who die each year, or 121 plus who die each day, that's not really the full picture. Not to go on too much of a rant, but Conversations Cafe is always about sort of taking small bites out of the larger conversation that's not just suicide prevention, it's mental health. And what Hope for the Day does when we talk about proactive suicide prevention is a conversation on building tools and strategies to disrupt the highest risk factors for suicide, disrupt the escalation process. And it's important to understand where that's coming from. The single biggest obstacle to effective mental health care and suicide prevention in general is this obstacle of stigma. And we talk about this if you ever come to our education classes or hear us speak. We're always talking about it as the biggest obstacle when we talk about social and cultural factors that try to dictate how we express ourselves. But it's also important to understand the structural reality behind that. Hope of the Day has three strategic prongs that we're after: outreach, education, and activism. And it's important to color that for people here and listening elsewhere, is that when we talk about outreach, education, and activism, by outreach, we mean we want to raise the visibility of resources. By education, we want to inform people how to recognize earliest signs and symptoms and know where to go for support and treatment. And three, we need to empower people to get involved, not just in the conversation, but in setting policy. And the reason we came up with those strategic prongs is because let's talk about the reality around mental health in our society. When we talk about stigma, it sounds like a buzzword, but it has three very specific, tangible ways that it impacts all of us in ways that you can see. Number one, stigma makes us silent as individuals. So there's too many people walking around in society who very well may know something is not right. But because we've always treated mental health for the longest time as being something culturally and socially that we 100%, 110% control, meaning when it comes to our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, this is something that we were always supposed to be totally in control of by willpower, by strength, by human character. People who struggle or find complications of their life from mental health, whether it's genetically based or it's coming from trauma or psychological injuries, have always been led to believe that if it impacts their life and they're not able to navigate it on their own, it's an expression of weakness. It's an expression or failing of character, that it's some sort of fault or failing of themselves or their family background. And here's how this really plays out. It keeps us silent, but people can know something's wrong because we don't talk about it. They may entirely be blaming themselves for something that could be genetically based or blaming themselves for experiencing trauma. Furthermore, stigma keeps us silent as a community. The second way that we see stigma play out is when we say silence as a community, we don't talk about where there are resources and directions to go for support. In the same way that you might know how to recognize a 24-hour cold or call 911, we don't do that for mental health. So even if someone recognizes that there's an issue, because we don't make resources visible, we don't make direction visible, and baseline recognition of where to go and recognize signs and symptoms, people often feel alone, and that further compels the silence that we individually feel. And then third, institutionally, we don't as a community prioritize mental health. And what this does is it creates a number of deleterious effects on how we approach mental health. One, it's traditionally reactive. We do not talk about mental health until it basically blows up in our face. You see this manifested in the way that we treat clinicians, not like our primary care doctors and dentists and surgeons and all those folks in which you plan out 6-month sessions and 1-year checkups and things like that. We don't access psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists until mental health is directly impacting us, and it's always reactive. It also creates this hierarchy that there's this illusion that there's more important or less important, which can silence people if they feel like their experience doesn't match up with a societal standard of what trauma should be or what a mental health challenge should look like, that it should be visible, even though you may not be going through psychosis and it may not be as visible as other types of challenges we can face. So you put that into reality, and here's the problem. You have someone who may recognize that there's something wrong with themselves, but they have no tools for diagnosis. And even if they do know something's wrong and they do want to access mental health, you have a few realities. If we do our job and get people to say, hey, I'm not okay, where do I go? You go to a hospital, there may not be enough beds. There may be a waiting list for private practice. There's not a lot of coverage and support in insurance. Furthermore, when it's about mental health in relationship to your job, your family, your academic performance, there's not a whole lot of understanding. So you can experience job loss. You can experience disruptions in your family. You can experience difficulties in your school that are insensitive. When it comes to needing more clinicians, you may need representational background support. People whose experiences are tied to gender and identity, sexual orientation, people who may want representation in terms of cultural and ethnic backgrounds. They want to talk to someone who looks like them or comes from their same economic or ethnic intersection. all of these things that exist and all these shortcomings and deficiencies in the mental health world are due to a lack of prioritizing mental health within our community, creating a social policy that makes us want to back it up with legislation, back it up with community supports in terms of financing for mental health, access to services and things like that. And then most importantly, just as an individual, being able to talk about it with our friends and family. We're not aware that we can have those conversations. So what we do with Conversations Cafe, what we're after with these kind of work, is really this vision of when we talk about raising the visibility, this conversation has to be more than just September Suicide Prevention Month. This conversation has to be every single day because our mental health is every single day. Education helps dispel those stigmas, and taking action is you. Anyone who's hearing this right now can do things. You do not have to be a clinician to be able to help support improving and reducing suicide rates by being able to raise the visibility of resources with us, being able to educate yourself and normalize the conversation among your peers, and being the people who can make it okay to have these conversations one-to-one, peer-to-peer, family member to family member. So that might sound like a bit of a rant, but the way we actually get to do those things beyond that broad talking is we all have to find our space. Some people are going to be working in the macro, some are going to be working in the micro, but one thing we all can do is part of the first prong is outreach, is being able to join in raising the visibility. That's recognizing that it's okay not to be okay. And our episode, The Light Project, is wrapped around this first central call to action of joining people and raising the visibility. One of the most powerful tools we can do right now to break the silence and break stigma is share our stories. Share our stories through art, share our stories through music, share our stories visually, audibly, in every sort of platform possible. So it's my absolute pleasure and honor to talk about a project that is focused on raising the visibility and bringing these conversations to light, because yes, this is big and complex, but it's not hopeless. We all have the ability to be able to help join in this goal. So we're joined today by Jamie and Chris, and you're going to learn a little bit about the Light Project. Hi, Jamie and Chris.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
My name again is Jackie Carmody. I'm an art therapist and licensed clinical professional counselor. So before doing this Conversations Cafe, I obviously looked up the Light Project and have heard about what you guys do through Hope for the Day and just a lot of good feedback from other people who have worked with you. But I wanted to know more about like the backstory and kind of how you guys got started. So I guess, Jamie, if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Hello, I'm Jamie, and I feel like this is a long story. How did it start? So the Light Project, was this idea I had in my head for like years. Like just for some reason, I just wanted to do this portrait project centered around depression. Backstory, I was diagnosed with depression when I was 16 years old, and I struggled a lot with it throughout my life and had my ups and downs with it. And so I kind of just wanted to do it. I thought it would be like a therapeutic thing for me. And art and photography are very therapeutic for me to begin with. So I thought this would be like a perfect culmination of those two things. And I had never talked about it with anybody. Like I had never even told anybody the idea. And for some reason, I just like blurted it out to Chris one day. I was like, you know what? I really want to do this project. And like, maybe like I could shoot you or you could shoot me, or like we could find somebody else to shoot. Like, I don't know. Like it's an idea, right? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So we were like, whatever, time goes on. And he calls me up one day and he goes, okay, don't be mad. And I was like, a man saying that to a woman is never a good idea. But I was like, okay, don't give me a reason to be mad. And he's like, well, I know a couple people from Hope for the Day, and I kind of like told them your idea for your project, and they love it, and they want to meet with you, or with us, you know, because we wanted to like do it together. And I was like, well, like that was totally, it blew my mind. Like literally blew my mind that this tiny idea I had in my head even like had any traction, or that anybody like really cared, or like that anybody really wanted to see that, you know? And it just made me kind of realize like maybe more people, I mean, I know a lot of people suffered from depression, but it's like nobody talks about it. Like you said, like nobody like really is out there with it. And like maybe people are striving for this. Like, maybe people do want to see this. Like, they want to see the faces that they can relate to. And for me, like, I think that's what it is. It's like this kind of like this sense of community and this like universal like vibe that like we all kind of like see these faces in these photos and we know exactly what they're thinking. Like, we know exactly how they're feeling, even though it's like the hardest thing to describe in the world, you know? So, I don't know. I guess that's kind of how it started. And then we just have kind of kept the ball rolling from there, I guess. I don't know. What else?
I think the important thing that Carl teed up that you addressed was bringing a visualization of this topic to life and from a very human place. And my background's in advertising creative, and so I basically tell stories for a living. And so that's where kind of the baby was born between this idea where when she told me all about her idea for herself from her place, it was a very personal story and a very powerful story that as a human, you feel that emotive response. And so that's where, you know, she's the artist. I'm more the madman from, you know, John Hamm. So I had this idea of, well, maybe this is something that can help a whole ton of people. And basically the whole premise of the light project is simply a black background, a single light, two chairs, one person in front of the light and the other one behind the camera. And in a confined, safe space where us as the shooter and the, I guess the narrator, you could say, we ask very direct personal questions, two questions. It's how has mental health affected you in your life personally or somebody you love? And then the second question is what brings light to your life and fills you with hope and joy and passion and gets you up in the morning? And that sounds very elementary in a way, but where the artistic part of this is when you ask somebody those two questions and they start talking about that first question, it's going to show on their face and they're going to emote a little bit of a tense feeling, a little bit of a sad feeling, something in that darker shadow side of things. And once we get to the second question about what brings them hope and spirit and life, they start talking about something that they love that makes them fully happy. And again, that's going to show in their face. And what we do is while we're talking to them, having that conversation, we're rattling off a few shots, you know, maybe a yard or two away. And just to basically capture that transformation in somebody's face from the dark to the light, where they transform from thinking about something that's not easy to think about, let alone talk about, until they're talking about something that they love so much that they're smiling and laughing. And so far that since we've been doing this, we've heard some beautiful stories that have started in really dark places, and 100% of them have ended up in beautiful places. And it's just really cool to look back and see that transformation from what that first sentence was to where they left off. And the whole point is that these photos are going to hit social media. And, you know, the beautiful thing that Carl talked about was, you know, that there is no race, gender, creed, anything with this topic. And so our hope is that, you know, a kid in Germany might feel something positive seeing a story from a 50-year-old accountant in Chicago with their face and their story. And, you know, it's just a beautiful thing because at the end of the day, we're all human. We all have these feelings. And what we do for a living, you know, how much money we make, what kind of car we drive, none of that stuff matters in this topic. And to strip it down to just a black and white photo, a light and a face and a story, it just connects with people so deeply. And so far, it's been really, really great, all the stories we've captured and every single session. And it's about a five-minute thing. It's just photos, a couple questions. After every single one, we get a hug from that person that we were talking to. And they're not just a okay, thanks hug. They are a deep, passionate, almost like they've known us for 20 years kind of hug. And it's a cathartic moment for them to tell that story to a complete stranger under a bright light with a camera in their face. Sounds terrifying, but for whatever reason, that human moment is just so bonded and connected to the story that they're talking to us like they've known us forever. And it's just a really beautiful thing. And it's been cool to kind of see it get bigger and bigger. And just, we're certainly excited for it to kind of hit the market, as we say in the ad world. But for the main point that it's going to help people and help people all over the world.
Thank you for sharing that. And it's important for people to understand, you know, when we talk about these kind of projects, we talk about utilizing self-expression, and people will hear that as dancing and singing and painting and not necessarily make the correlation between mental health. But the fact is that we communicate the internal experience through self-expression. And I don't just mean that in the sort of like hippy-dippy sense, and I like hippy-dippy things. But when we talk about the emotions and thoughts and feelings we have, that only comes out verbally and physically, you know, crying, tears, anger, frustration, but also through words. So there's something really powerful about the fact that tying in the artistic point and focus of self-expression directly into mental health, it's organic, it's natural, it feels as a one-to-one. And I kind of wanted to, I got a question for you, but before I answer it, just sort of, Jackie, from the clinical side of things, what's the value of people hearing other people's stories?
I think there's a...
I'm seeing.
Sorry. Yeah, there's a huge clinical value. I mean, every time I get a new client, I kind of am waiting to be like, okay, what does this person look like? What are they going to come in with? How open are they going to be? You know, I know nothing about them before they're coming in. And I almost get this sense that they wish they had a tool where they could give me this photograph with this description, be like, please just here's my story, you know, because it is so hard to, you know, disclose and kind of unravel in a short amount of time, which is a 50-minute therapy session. But I think being able to have a container for your experience through artwork, whether it's a portrait of yourself or whether it's music or artwork, whatever it may be, to have that container is so much easier to be like, here, this is what my story is versus, you know, kind of owning it and having it come out of you all at once. So I think that's really powerful, just hearing that people can, you know, tell their story through their portraits, but then be able to be a viewer to their own story also. So it kind of moves them from that position of like, I'm a victim of all of these things to, you know, I'm a survivor of all these things. I can view myself and I can view my story. So, I think your question was, I don't remember the exact question, but I hope I answered it.
You hit it right on the head, because It's important to keep that in context, right? That there is such a powerful value to your potential subjects, which, not going to be an asshole, and then ask Jimmy and Chris, how has mental health impacted your lives?
Oh, dear.
So we're allowed to swear?
As far as you feel comfortable talking about, but I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, we can swear. Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Fuck.
So, let me go first. Or you want to go first? Okay.
I kind of touched on it a little bit. This is weird for me. I like literally never talk about this. This whole light project is very therapeutic for me too, because it's actually making me talk about this stuff. So, I was diagnosed with depression when I was 16 years old, and I went through years of being, I guess, under-medicated, wrong medications, not receiving the help I really needed. And as a result, I self-medicated. I went through a lot of self-destructive behaviors, all the textbook stuff, you know, is like you're trying to make yourself feel better by any way but the right way, you know. So finally, it kind of came to a head when I was hospitalized for it for a month, several years ago. And I like to, like, I wish I could say that that was like my turning point and that was like, oh, everything was so much better the day I got out of the hospital. But like, it really wasn't. It was still this struggle, this like uphill battle of like, God, like, when am I going to feel better? And I think like what happened was, and it sounds, I guess it sounds kind of silly, but I was going through like a really dark period of my life, and I kind of just decided like, fuck it. Like, I have nothing else to lose here. Like, I'm just gonna start being myself and putting myself out there and being vulnerable and being open and like putting my art out into the world, because like I do all these things, but I don't talk about any of them because I think people are gonna think I suck. And like, it was crushing me. Like, I was like crushing under the weight of all this like depression and all these like self-deprecating thoughts. And like, finally I was like, you know what? If you guys don't like it, whatever, man, like deal. So I just started putting myself out there, and I started getting these like positive responses, and I was like, okay, you know, like suspicious. And then I was like putting myself out there more and trying to be more vulnerable and being like open and kind of like talking about myself and like trying to relate to people, because I was like, you know, I was like, I feel like somebody needs to hear this because they probably thought this before, or need to, you know, like have been in this place before. And it just kind of like grew and grew. And like, I felt like I just got more of a response every time I was more vulnerable and more myself. Like, the more I put myself out there, the more positively people responded to me, which was like a crazy concept to me, because I was like so closed off for so long that, I mean, I got called like a robot. Like, you're like, you don't have any feelings. Like, you're just a robot. You know, you never cry. Like, what's wrong? You know? And I was like, well, no, like I have these feelings. I just don't like show them, you know? And then once I started doing that, it was like, oh my God, like this is so much better. Like, why did I not do this for so long? And I mean, I take antidepressants every day. Like, it's fine. Like, I for so long wanted to be somebody who didn't have to do that. And now I just like accept it as part of my life. But like, I remember sitting down one day when I was in a really dark place and I wasn't on medication, and I was sitting on my floor and I was just like feeling like the weight of the world. And I just kind of like had this moment where I was like, this can't be my life. Like, this can't be it. You know, like, this is not, like, I'm young. Like, this can't be my entire life. And then it was like this wake up call of like, that's kind of like when I started putting myself out there and went back to a doctor and was like, look, I can't be this person that's off these medications. Like, I need this, you know? And he said something really funny to me, and I still remember it. He goes, Jamie, he goes, you have hypothyroid. And I was like, what? No, I don't. Like, I don't have hypothyroid. He's like, no. He's like, you have hypothyroid. So like, what do? You like beat yourself up for not producing enough thyroid hormone. You like, you just suffer the effects of hypothyroidism because like you're blaming yourself because you don't produce enough of it. And I was like, and he was like, no, you take a pill for it and it corrects itself, and then you feel normal like everybody else. And I was like, oh my God, that's the most brilliant thing I've ever heard. And so then I was like, okay, yeah, I'm taking an antidepressant, and now I'm like back to normal, back to myself, you know, like baseline. So that's kind of a synopsis.
Thank you for sharing that.
So working with a lot of young people in therapy, and whether it's individual therapy or family therapy, I see kind of this stuckness of not really knowing how to be vulnerable or not really understanding the benefit of how that can help them or how that can really propel them forward in their mental health, you know, story and, you know, their journey to feeling better and progress. So how would you describe that insight, or how, like, kind of what clicked for you, and what do you wish, you know, would have clicked earlier, and how could a mental health professional have helped you get there?
I think like I said, kind of, I was in such a dark place, and I kind of just thought about it as like, I mean, why the fuck not? Like, it was, and it's, sorry, that sounds like, so I think like what I wish I would have felt like that like 10 years earlier, where I was so concerned about people judging me and like hating what I produced, or like being like, oh, look at her, she's like trying to be a photographer, like how lame, you know? And I was like, once I started actually doing it and like people started responding, I was like, why didn't I do this 10 years ago? Because like, even if there's this many people over here who do think I suck, there's all these people who don't think I suck. And that's all you really need, is just like that one little like ounce of positivity to propel you forward. And then you're fine, because you're like, okay, I can do this. Like, yeah, some of my stuff might fail, some of it might not fail. Or like, at the end of the day, like, you're just fulfilling what's inside you, and you're just putting it out there, and you're getting that weight off your shoulders. Like, you're just taking that pressure off of you and putting it out there in the world. And it's just this, like, good energy comes back to you. I know that sounds like hippie dippy, like you said, but you know, it's like for real.
For sure. No, I think it makes total sense. And it's kind of that moment of deciding, like, hey, wait, I actually want this verse. I'm just going to choose to wait. You know, like, you choose to just be like, all right, I'm going to try, I'm going to change the pattern. I'm going to do something different.
Yeah. I don't want to cut you off, Chris, but I think to go to that, there's a salient point you brought up, and that is that it's going to look different for a lot of people. It's going to look what that thing is, but the fear of judgment, the apprehension of the outside eyes, however it's going to come out, even if the eyes are, you're afraid of what your loved ones are going to say about what it is. Because the is can be, it could be your creative endeavors that give you a sense of fulfillment. The is could be talking about something that was traumatic for you. The is could be admitting that you've had this thing, these thoughts in your head or these things, and you're afraid to bring them out in public. Getting over that mountain of the judgment or the fear is, if there was one sort of magic trick you could teach everyone, you would probably be able to retire by now with the book. But it's important for people to hear, you know, it didn't magically occur. It was an ongoing working process. And I guess I want to bounce it over to Chris, like piggybacking off of that.
So for me, it's a different side of the coin. So, you know, certainly for Jamie, it was she was in it personally, and it was a personal thing that she battled. And on my perspective of things, you know, it all started for me because of the things going on with my mom growing up and still to this day, frankly, where at, you know, pretty young age, I was exposed to, you know, suicidal threats that would be said to my dad from her point of view. And, you know, as a little kid, kind of hearing those battles and just kind of locking myself in my room and, you know, kind of just didn't never want to come out. I just want to stay in my world. And, you know, that's where I really, the upside of that was being forced into that kind of cave to hide from all this stuff I was hearing and kind of catching on to at a young age. That's where I kind of just developed my creative vice. And so I couldn't go talk to anybody about this stuff. So I wrote stories on crayons and construction paper. And, you know, I drew pictures and I, you know, I made all these big elaborate stories with my Legos. And, you know, and then as I got older, that translated into songwriting. And still with those things going on with my my mom and my dad, it just translated into that kind of punk rock rage. And it just, I always had an outlet for what was happening on the outside, but it started to kind of seep inside for me, dealing with that with a loved one, especially a parent, and having it just be this constant dark cloud that hovers. Because in high school, you're not going to talk about why you don't want your friends to come over because you're afraid your mom's going to say some suicidal thing to your friend you just brought home for the first time. And then you're that kid, you know, that has that parent. So it was something that I just kept bottled up, but I always released it back out through some creative vice. And, you know, I've been a singer in a band for a little over a decade, and that's been my main true voice for a long time. And I've written pretty heavily about the subject, but it doesn't come from that personal voice. It comes from that affected by voice. And so as that kind of relates to, you know, what we're here talking about is, you know, it got to the point where music wasn't enough anymore to talk about that personally, to get it out, because it was cathartic for me to write songs about stuff that I knew kids were listening to, and Spotify tells me that, you know, 5,000 of them are listening to it in Finland last month. You know, like, that kind of stuff feels good when you know that your words might be helping somebody, but still, it just wasn't enough. And, you know, that's where photography really kind of started to replace music a little bit, and I just wanted to literally bring more visual to things that I was feeling. So, you know, even the type of photography that really got me interested in the medium was very dark stuff. It was, you know, I would break into abandoned buildings and just take really dark art. That's what really made me feel happy, filled me with light. And that translated into doing really dark portraits of people and just kind of shedding light on the side of people that you don't normally see. And that was really interesting to me because so many people always want the perfect, well-lit selfie and the this is what I want to look like versus the this is who I am, man. It's real. It's raw. And so that's where photography really took over to allow that new feeling of getting that emotion out. And then it turned into, well, okay, I think I'm cool now. I feel good about everything. How can I use this medium that now I feel pretty good about to help other people or to spread that mindset of raw and real and to break down the facade of trying to hide behind something? And so photography really took over for that. And as far as the light project, that's where that connection really was as far as, you know, Jamie's personal story and where she came from and then my outward approach with photography and her inward approach with photography. It just kind of came together of, you know, I think we had two totally different backgrounds, but on that one linear commonality, it just worked as far as telling stories, showing the emotion in a face, and just having it still be an artistic expression. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're still artists, and it's just how can we help other people and how can we feel that release ourselves as artists?
Awesome. Well, I think just hearing, you know, both of your stories and having it be Suicide Prevention Month and kind of the theme of connectedness is kind of fluid through both of your stories of, you know, doing the work, expressing yourselves, putting it out there, you know, that cathartic release of what your story is and what those emotions are, but really needing to connect with other people was that puzzle piece that really got you where you were going and really kind of propelled you both forward. And so for people listening, I guess, how would you describe how much connectedness has helped, you know, and so they can kind of take that advice.
One thing I will say is from a connected standpoint, since we've been doing this at events with Hope for the Day, I will say that the connection is a very powerful thing from each person that we talk to and we shoot. And the one that sticks out for me personally was this 14-year-old kid from Southside, Chicago. And he was telling me about his story, and it was almost identical to mine. And it was, you know, he was very confident in the way he was talking about it as a 14-year-old kid. And I at one point did have a tear in my eye in the main mindset of I'm 34-year-old dude from Western Pennsylvania. And here's this 14-year-old kid from Southside Chicago. We're sitting a yard apart and he's got my camera in his face. And he's telling me a story that is almost identical to what I went through at his age. And here we both are in this medium talking about it, knowing that once this campaign goes live, some kid in, you know, France might have that same exact thing that he went through or she went through. And that, you know, our little photograph and one sentence blurb is, sorry, to feed my meter. And that's just going to help that kid in another country. And so the idea of the connection is something that is in that moment, and it's a yard apart under a light, but that connection is also, you know, thousands of miles too. And I think that's something that we really want to see happen.
I totally agree. I think connection is, I think at the end of the day, everyone is just striving to connect. Like, I think nobody just wants to feel like alone in this world. You know, we all just want to relate to somebody. We all want to connect with somebody. And that's, depression like sucks that out of you. You don't feel connected to anything or anyone. You feel like you're on this deserted island, just like heavy and alone. And then when you finally start connecting with people, it's like what gets you through the day. Like, honestly, like I don't even know how else to explain it. It's like just meeting these people or connecting with them and just hearing their stories and like seeing the look on their face and the vulnerability that they're willing to give us. It's just so empowering and so amazing to me. Like it blows my mind how open people have been with us. And honestly, this project is like just as therapeutic for me as it is for the people in front of my camera. Like this is a whole new world for me. Like I said, too, like I don't talk about this stuff until recently. So this is like really therapeutic for me as well. And just feeling that connection between these people, like people I've never met before, and they're sitting across from me and they're telling me these like stories of their life and these intimate things. And it's like, I know exactly what they mean. It's like, I see the look on their face and I'm like, God, I've had that look. Like I've had that look on my face, you know? Or like, I know exactly how you feel right now. Like, even though you're not saying it, you know? And then like seeing their face on like the second question, like the smile or like their eyes kind of like light up. And it's crazy to see. Like if you look at it on the back of a camera, it's wild. Like I show people sometimes, like, do you want to see? And I just like flip, you know, back and forth. And it's like, editing the first batch of these, watching that like expression change, I literally started crying because it was like, I know exactly what this is. Like I've been both of these things, you know, like I've been both of these places. And it's just so nice to feel, I'm like gonna cry. It's so nice to feel like you're not alone, you know. I'm an idiot.
It's okay. Thank you.
You're a good girl.
This is important to understand. And over the day, we'll talk about to sort of break through stigma and conversations on mental health and create a new platform for, we'll ask people to sort of think of their mind like a bottle of soda and it can build up with pressure. And we talk about these things like valves and valving it out and that's self-care. But this powerful word with connected, we recently had guests on, I think in June, the Cruz Harrington family. They travel around in this wide wonder bus, sort of breaking down stigma. And they said a quote that's I keep using because it's salient. I'm just giving them the citation. But they mentioned that connections are the currency of wellness. And I really believe that because paying attention to both Jamie and Chris's story, coming directly from something that ends up with a criteria for a clinical diagnosis is one track of experience. There's also a lot of people living with things that won't necessarily fit a genetic-based clinical diagnosis. And they'll tell themselves that these are things that they shouldn't be impacted by. And going through domestic instability, whether it's direct parents or family members fighting in the home, or even things like living in poverty, which has a charitable toxic stress to it, you know, the way to think about your mental health and universalize this and not exclude anyone is if you were to, there's a video going around online right now that you might have seen, but it's this woman holds up a bottle of water and she says, you know, I'm holding this up for 10 minutes and it weighs 8 ounces or whatever. It's not that heavy. Now, if I hold it up for an hour, it's heavier. I hold it for 10 hours, it's heavier. If I hold it for 24 hours, you can almost injure yourself. And when we think about our experiences, and we talk about the soda bottles and valves, when it comes to our lived experiences, whether it's coming from these clinical diagnoses or these other lived experiences that don't chart into this genetic background, that's unfortunately what a lot of us are doing. We're carrying burdens on ourselves that build up these pressures, and maybe there's an avenue to express them that doesn't become detrimental to our health. But because of all the social elements around us, it becomes an almost crippling pressure. Whether it is coming from our genetics, direct trauma, or things we experience that we would have never thought were psychological injuries. So as we're wrapping up here, one of the things I want to mention when I bring all this up is that paying attention to both of your stories and, you know, the things that Jackie's contributed here. The Light Project is not just an opportunity to let others know they're not alone, but the Light Project is an opportunity for people to start a conversation for themselves and to help others start a conversation, because perhaps one of the best things Hope of the Day can be doing and one of the best things Conversations Cafe can be doing is reminding people, again, you don't have to be a clinician to start this conversation. If you can start this conversation for your own mental health, this is how we reduce suicide rates. If you can take this conversation and support your peers starting it, this is how we do reduce suicide rates, because we don't let people escalate under their burdens to a point of crisis. So it should never be underestimated or dismissed just how powerful the Light Project can be, how phenomenal that it was inspired from Jamie's own lived experience, and that you two working together were able to sort of bring a realization to it. It should never be dismissed. This is how we make change. Ideas that we come together, collaborate on, and put out into the community. And you have to trust and have faith. And you two should both be, you know, commended for taking a leap of faith with Hope for the Day, but both for yourselves. You know, everyone give them a little round of golf clap. Golf clap. So there's two things I want to touch on before we close out. First, when we finish, some of you will notice we have a little rigging set up by the We Are In This Together wall, the founder's wall, rather. If you would like to take part in the Light Project, which we'll be launching in the spring of 2020, you have the opportunity to sit down for a portrait with Jamie and Chris tonight. Second, before we close, I would like to just, if everyone sort of had any closing words, and as you're finishing, let people know where they can follow you and find you in your professional endeavors if you want. So I'll toss it over to Jackie, and then we'll just go down the line.
I said one thought, because you kept mentioning, you know, like universally people looking at these and reading these. Do you guys translate them to different languages, or like put them on different platforms where people can?
I think that will be part of it, because each, if you think of Instagram, for instance, each post, you know, if you think of a two swipe from the dark to the light, where we show that reflection and the change of the face, while we're shooting each person, we're also recording audio of their story, only for the purpose of taking out one small, pivotal, poignant, inspirational quote. And then that's kind of the quote that would be their battle cry that would accompany that post and their face. It wouldn't be anything personal or, you know, too under the curtain. It's more something inspirational. And, you know, whenever we've been doing these and somebody says something very powerful that's inspirational, you know, we stop them and say, think what you just said. You know, what you just said right there might change somebody's life half a world away. And when they hear that, it's, they're like, oh my God, you're right. That feels incredible. And so they end each session feeling that personal cathartic release from what they have just told us all about. But also when we remind them that this is going to most likely help somebody else in a different walk of life, but that one bite that they said is going to be so powerful to somebody.
It's amazing. I can't wait to see them.
Make I guess
it good, no pressure.
I know, I'm the nervous one. I guess the only other thing I really want to say, except for like, I would love to shoot all your portraits. If you guys all want to be part of this, that'd be awesome. I just really want to say thank you to everyone. Like everyone who has participated in this, I keep saying like, I'm always surprised by it, but I really am. Like, I feel like I find it so amazing that people are able to be this open and vulnerable. I think because it took me so long, and like, I'm just seeing these people who are like, just met me, and they're like, here's my story, take my picture, and we like have this connection, and it's like this amazing moment. And it honestly has like given me so much positivity and like hope in my own life, and just really like been so therapeutic for me. I don't know how else to say that, but it's just been an amazing experience for me. And I hope that it's an amazing experience for everyone who's in front of the camera as well. When we started this project, I told Chris, like, if I can help one person, just like feel a little bit better or like start a conversation about their feelings or their thoughts or like just see how far they've come through the photos. Like if I can just help one person in any way, like then I feel like I've done my job. Like I just want this project to help people and help people put themselves out there and make themselves vulnerable and realize the benefit of like actually talking about it and connecting. And so far it's been amazing and shocking and awesome.
Absolutely beautiful. So with that, we're going to be wrapping up Conversations Cafe. We strongly encourage you, if you feel confident or comfortable enough, to participate in the light project in the back. We'll be here for a few minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, something like that. We got to let the shop close, but. And I want everyone who's listening to also pay attention that, again, you do not have to be a clinician, and we don't want it to just be clinicians, with all due respect to Jackie, to be in this mental health discussion. We consider Jamie and Chris agents of impact, and if you want to learn how you can take action more formally with Hope for the Day, please go to our website, hftd.org, that's henryfrankthomasdavid.org, and check out how to get involved with us. We want to help create platforms for activism, and your voice and your community is where we want to be. So again, Conversations Cafe is hosted at Sip of Hope Coffee Bar. So let's give a big round of applause to Sip of Hope Coffee Bar staff. BK Jackson, what's up? Burr, 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 burr. And the show is produced by the amazing Rick Osowski, Anthologies of Hope. Shout out to Rick. Everyone say hi to Rick. We can't do it without Anthologies of Hope. Please check out the rest of the Anthologies of Hope podcast series. It's absolutely phenomenal. People sharing their life experience and stories. And, of course, Conversations Cafe is brought to you with the generous support from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and Banyan Treatment Centers. I am your host, Carl Evans, and I just want you all to, as Lizzo said, if you can love me, you can love yourself. So love yourself. And remember, it's okay not to be okay. And everyone have a great night. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.